take vacations, so let me alone. They spy on me, I try to hide, they won't let me alone. They persecute me, they're the judge and jury, I'm in one.
Little bit of Dream Police action there for you, courtesy of Cheap Trick. Hey, it's Gunner, and you're listening to Steel City Music, of course. In this hour, we are going to spin some Smithereens. We'll also spin some Idlewild for you as well. And what else we got on the go here? Idlewild, Smithereens. Oh, yeah. And of course, we're going to be starting things off with In Excess. And we'll just keep continuing on with the old... Here's the thing. I love listening to interviews, good interviews, bad interviews, funny interviews, the whole lot, just to see how they develop, how they handle themselves, that sort of thing. And also, I like to go back into older interviews of music or whatever, really, when I'm on YouTube, and to see what the artist was like in that time period, right? I don't know. It's just something that I find fascinating. And so I come across these interviews. I'm like, oh wow, I remember this time period of my life. I make all these attachments. That's what I'm trying to get at. So we're going to spin some In Excess, a really great band that was really super huge in the 80s, and they came out of Australia. And we'll hear a track. They were on the Lost Boys soundtrack, a really big film back in the 80s. Tune's called Good Times, and they performed with Jimmy Barnes on that. It was like a big, epic radio track here in Southern Ontario, as I remember. It was probably around the world anyway. What You Need was another huge, huge hit for In Excess, and we'll put that in here as well. Also, The One Thing will be in this as well. And we're going to start things off, and also Don't Change, which is like one of my favorite tracks that they put out back in the early 80s. It just has everything... It just has all the ear candy for me, so I just enjoy that. And then that track was also covered by a lot of different people in the States and in Canada, and one of which was out of Buffalo. The Goo Goo Dolls covered Don't Change as well, and they did a great version of that. But I like to kick things off with an interview with In Excess from Beatbox back in 1985, and that was a long, long, long time ago for some of us. Some of us weren't even born. Some of us were born, and we're kind of like, we're getting old. Here it is.
How does the NXS community run itself?
Democratically.
Very democratic.
It's losing a lot of it, though.
We're starting to become autocratic.
Autocratic with yourselves? Or
Yeah, probably.
Well, like, just on a personal kind of level, like, who do you feel... like responsible to? Is it like, you know, yourself and your friends or your partner or the whole band or the record company or, you know, the whole of your audience?
All those people and more.
you know. Mm.
You really do start to get an overwhelming feeling of responsibility after a while. Of now, we do. But there's certain types of responsibility. Some are a cold, hard, factual one, and some are emotional. To the audience and to friends and all these people that work with us on a creative basis, it's fairly emotional. It's fairly give and take. There's a respect going on. With a record company, I don't know. We own everything, so we don't have people standing around us with the big fat cigars going, "Hey guys, this better be a hit." We really take all responsibility for whatever we do on a creative level.
Yeah. I think we all have a fairly, just because we all grew up together, went to school together and that sort of thing. We all have a fairly strong personal responsibility to each other, you know, looking after each other's asses, you know.
Yeah, right.
But.
Kirk's got new glasses.
Yeah, you know, Michael gives me eye tests and things, you know.
What about with, things like girlfriends or wives and the band? Is there much of a conflict between there that you have to kind of work out and deal with?
It's very hard on a relationship. Yeah. You spend 6 months of the year away from somebody. You know, keeps it going.
there's a lot of different things that make it difficult too. I mean, obviously, someone has a girlfriend, it's going to be very difficult if that person doesn't get on with everyone. I mean, it's sort of like you almost have to find a girl that's going to get on with everyone, you know, because otherwise it creates problems, you know.
Terrible.
So no, do you like my girlfriend?
I just interested in whoever I want, you know. There's no use in curbing yourself, you know, in an emotional level. You just end up probably you'd lose your creativity, you'd lose a lot of parts of you.
Do you ever feel like changing people's minds just in the work that you do, or that you feel like you want to, you know, influence people's attitudes?
I think we have in Australia, the way we've worked has been very hard, and the way we run ourselves and people around us has been very hard, and we get flack for it. Chris does, our manager, gets flack for it quite a lot, because we work on an international basis. We go with the same speed and technique as we would in New York as we do in Sydney. And sometimes that can be a little bit disturbing to people, but it's the way it runs. We believe that Australia is on the map. It's not. We don't. Oh, we're back in Australia now. It's miles. That's a frame of mind. We're just as close. We're only one day away from anywhere in the world. We're there, you know. Mm. We don't have the attitude of Australia, that little island down under. It doesn't exist. It's a frame of mind.
Do you think that we're lucky to be living in Australia?
Very much so. It's the luckiest country in the world. And that may sound like a cliche, but it is. It's got the most going for it. People don't really realise it. And we've got to stop it from going down the tubes, even though it's a long way off from doing that. But you feel a lot more patriotic, and as Michael said, you want to come back and get Australia moving and, you know, life being in it and all that sort of stuff. But
yeah.
It's so much better off than the other country. Like, just the fact that people have a lot more room to become people.
The food, everything.
Yeah, right. It's the simple things in Australia that make life of good quality, whereas overseas people have to sort of spend more money on material things, you know. I think so anyway. But I think Australia's in for a big change in the next 10, 15 years. I think we'll come across problems in globally that we had never had before, we never thought would ever exist.
And the world is obviously getting closer. I mean, as far as, you know, moving in on, you know, Australia's doorstep, it's like obviously as flight gets quicker and things like that. I mean, it's bringing the rest of the world closer to Australia, which I think is going to be an interesting thing. It'll become more cosmopolitan, probably.
A lot less American, a lot more European, I think, is going to start coming to Australia.
I think that'd be a good thing.
Yeah. Yes.
I think any influence is, you know, a beneficial, really. And as I said, you know, like food, for example. That's the thing that really hit me. I mean, after you tour America for quite a few months, where the food is very, very bland. By the, you know, all you can think about when you eat a meal in America is, gee, I wish I was home eating here, you know, because everything's available.
This,
you know,
is
anything you want food-wise, and it's always good and, you know, fresh and hungry, you can tell.
Pretty epic track right there. Jimmy Barnes with In Excess, taken from the Lost Boys soundtrack back in the early 80s. In Excess, what a great band, man. I never knew I liked them that much until you go back and you listen to stuff going, oh yeah, I like that tune. When I was a younger man, it was just like, whatever, I could take it or leave that, but I guess I really enjoyed it and was secretly hiding it. All right, so this next act is out of Scotland, and it was a band that always intrigued me. They're called Idlewild, and I used to spin them back at C101 Days and Indie 101 because they came out over around the same time as Coldplay and some other acts, and those ones just took off, but Idlewild never got the traction as those other bands, because I guess they never wrote those big epic tunes, and Coldplay had that ability. But when I listened to some of their songs, I've always thought there was always a folkiness to it when I heard it. And that was just coming from listening to folk albums as a youth via my father, who used to play them all the time. And there's a thing with Scottish people and East Coast people, you know, you can hear certain elements if you listen to enough of it in rock bands, and it just gets you right away. So I stumbled across this interview with them, and they were talking about how they never quite were able to get the traction. They did well, but not on that big superstardom thing. So we'll hear A Modern Way of Letting Go. We're also going to spin You Held the World in Your Arms Tonight and Ghosts in the Arcade.
We're one of the few bands, supposedly, British bands in recent years that have really made a total natural evolution in terms that we've kind of reinvented our sound completely.
Yeah.
You look at bands like Coldplay or Muse or other groups, they've established a sound and kept with it to an extent, you know. Yeah. Whereas I think that we have changed from basically being a punk rock band to being something completely different than that. I mean, so, it's so different what we do now than what we did when we started.
But how do the two compare? I mean, do you see...
Well, I mean, I think that when we did that acoustic tour at the start of the year, people were genuinely surprised that we could... That we were like that. We're like a kind of a... We can be a folk band if we want to.
Yeah.
We reinvent our songs slightly. Colin, our drummer, plays his accordion, the piano, and we have a violin player, Jenny, that plays with us. And it is folk music, really. It's just contemporary folk music. And then when we amplify that and change it slightly and put more energy into it, it becomes like sort of rock and roll, I guess. So, but I think a lot of the... I view folk music as something different anyway. To me, like, folk music is something that's an idea put, you know, to sort of simple arrangement that comes across, you know, as thought behind it. So I think rock, a lot of rock music can be, you know, when it's broken down, are folk songs, you know. We're in a really weird position in Britain because a lot of the people that really liked us for, like, our more aggressive stuff aren't maybe as keen on what we're trying to do now.
Yeah.
And all the people that like that kind of music, like folk music, country music, and they don't know about us yet, you know what I mean? So we're kind of in this weird transitional phase when we're trying to, you know, we're getting accepted by a larger group of people, I suppose. And we're quite prepared that's going to take a while, you know.
Yeah.
But I think things like Cambridge Folk Festival and the fact that this single we're putting out is the first single we've ever had played on, like, Radio 2. They've picked up on it. And all these things are indication to me that, you know, people are finally starting to accept us as, like, a grown-up band instead of just, like, a bunch of teenagers. We've been doing this for quite a while now, and never to the level where, you know, it's never got been, like, our first record went out and it went ballistic. Like, someone like Bloc Party are probably going to have a hard time, because I've met them before and they're pretty sensitive young men, you know, and the fact that to be thrown into that, if you can't handle it, I mean, I'm quite glad in a way that we never had that. Because when I was younger, I wouldn't have been able to handle it either, you know. I don't think I would have. I think I would have been affected by what was around me too much.
Yeah.
And luckily, I've kind of grown up being in a band that have been, you know, as I said, popular, but never, like, you know, phenomenally popular. So it's, I've been able to learn about myself and the position I'm in, and by writing songs and travelling and meeting people, now I think all of us collectively feel quite strong in the fact that if we did suddenly blow up into this chart-topping band, we'd be able to handle it, but mainly because we wouldn't have, you know, we wouldn't change that much.
Yeah.
One good example of that is actually the band Snow Patrol, who I'm friendly with, the Glasgow band, and they've been at it for 10 years as well, and they became, like, this last record sold 2 million copies.
Yeah.
And they're exactly the same because they just know themselves, you know. It's all about being self-aware, I think. Well, basically what we're doing is describing ourselves through songs, and we're quite comfortable with that now, and I think that you can hear that in the lyrics and the music of our new record, which is a lot more sort of sparse in a way that you can hear all the guitar parts and hear what I'm singing and that kind of thing. There's a real sense for the people that make it, as opposed to this, like, product which records can become.
Finally, what for you epitomises the fact that you've made it? Do you feel that now, or do you feel that that's in a year's time?
I really think that success is judged purely by the individual. I think what my idea of success is probably not the same as yours or the person in the front row of the concert. It's certainly nothing to do with money, like, which is depressingly what a lot of people think it is. For me, it's not. I mean, obviously, I'm grateful that I can make a living out and play music, but I don't know. I mean, I feel successful probably at moments every day, and at the same time, I also feel like a complete failure at moments every day. It just really depends on what mood you're in. If I'm in a good mood, I feel successful. You know, I'm in a band that sell out venues and travel the world and meet people and play music, which is really all I want to do. But then if you're on a bad day, you can think, you know, what am I doing with my life? You know, like, I don't own anything. Like, I don't own a car, a house, you know. All my friends are getting married. I'm just like, you know. And then you think, no, because I'm a realist, you know. So, and what I want to do is this.
Really tell me what I want to know. I know, I hope, I know that matters don't matter as Listening to Steel City Music.
Awesome. Ghosts in the Arcade from Idlewild right there. Hey, you're listening to Steel City Music. I'm your host, Gunnar. You hear this show on the Hawk every Friday from 12 p.m. till 7 p.m. Closing out this hour, the Smithereens. A couple years back when Pat D'Annunzio passed away, I was just like, oh, man, that guy. He was one of these, like, rock and roll songwriters that I really enjoyed in my youth. Myself, Gavin O'Sullivan, and Steve Foster, we used to listen to those tapes until they got a little stretched out. You know, Gene Champagne, Mike Treblecock, they were always fans of the Smithereens as well. But this band just never took off. I think they're out of New Jersey. But before Pat passed away, a solid year beforehand, I was always going to my pal Lou over at This Ain't Hollywood. And Lou and I would always talk, we're always talking about music promotions, whatever, right? Whatever makes us laugh. And I said, I know this sounds strange to you, but I really think we should contact WestJet. Everybody that's in the Smithereens fan base that's down in the Buffalo, Jersey, that sort of area where they had a real big stronghold, and Boston and all those other areas, and say, let's do a week of the Smithereens at This Ain't Hollywood. WestJet becomes a sponsor. You know, we fly the band in. We put them up at the best hotel we have here. We get radio behind it. We get TV behind it, the whole nine yards. We make a spectacle of it. It would be just so much fun. And Lou was just like, wow, you know, that does sound like a good idea. And I would bring it up. And as we were getting close, I was like, I think we're going to do this. He passed away. It's like, oh, stupid. I can't believe we never did that. Well, I came across one of the last interviews with Pat D'Annunzio. So I thought I'd put that in here. Plus finishing off with some Smithereens music. Enjoy the set.
New Jersey is home to some of America's most influential and time-tested musicians, most of whom have played here at the Stone Pony. One group is marking a musical milestone this year, 35 years of the Smithereens.
I will stand up, I will fall. Please don't wait for me to call. I would like to say I'm sorry, but I won't.
35 years of unapologetic rock and roll. The Smithereens were formed in New Jersey in 1980, have put out 14 albums, scored several hit singles, and are one of rock's most enduring bands. I sat down with lead singer Pat D'Annunzio in the very house where the Smithereens began.
From the very first time we sat down to play together, in the basement of my parents' home right here in Scotch Plains, New Jersey, it sounded a lot like it sounds today.
I would like to make your day, but I'd rather fade away. I would like to say I'm sorry, but I won't.
Three of the Smithereens' four original members are still in the group. D'Annunzio and childhood friends from Carteret, lead guitarist Jim Babjik and drummer Dennis Dykin.
And I think the fact that there was that love and friendship and camaraderie that predated the formation of the band, we've been able to survive all these years. You know, we always put the welfare of the band ahead of any individual concern.
Would like to be your friend, and I've got to find a way to let you know I'm not like them.
The group's first major album, Especially For You, released in 1986, established its alt-rock status.
I remember going into the record shop to see our first album come out, and all of a sudden there was this new category called alternative, and I had never heard of it before. And all of a sudden we were alternative to, I guess, Michael Jackson, Madonna.
And I kiss your lips, just don't want to behave.
D'Annunzio believes it's the group's personal lyrics and its heavy guitar that make them stand out.
You write songs that, first and foremost, speak to your own heart. You know, your songs and your lyrics are an expression of your inner life and what you see around you, and hopefully the other members of the band react to them.
Too much passion is not enough.
look back on those early videos and photos, what do you think?
It's like a take no prisoners kind of attitude where if you like it, fine. If you don't, see it. You know, and that's what I see in those early pictures. You know, it's a lot of fun. I see us as we were then. We're still the same, but with all the changes that, that life brings, you know.
They credit 3.5 decades of longevity to the audience and to each other.
I think the key to staying together is that we like doing this, really. Like with anything in life, if you like doing it, you keep doing it. And the other part of it is that people still like to come out and see us.
What are you most proud of?
I'm most proud of the fact that we never really did compromise. We designed records that were meant to sound as good today as when we recorded them 30 years ago.
She was tall and cool and pretty. She dressed as black as gold.
It makes me happy, you know, that we had some sort of meaning in anyone's life. I mean, that's a major achievement. That the music meant something and still means something.
Sometimes I dream of me, then I dream of her behind the wall of sleep.
I'll see anything you want to. You're listening to The Hawk 101.5 FM in Hamilton, Ontario.
You're listening to Steel City Music.